Please silence all electronic devices.
Tell me why North Carolina should be the first in the nation primary.
We have the size of our population here. We have one of the most diverse electorates in the nation. North Carolina's very much a 50-50 swing state. If Donald Trump doesn't win North Carolina in 2020, he's not going to be president anymore. There's no real path for that.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the auxiliary bunker of truth, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Glad to have you along as always. Going to chat some presidential politics, what might play out in North Carolina in 2020, and just a smattering of election topics on the podcast today with Democratic strategist Morgan Jackson. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Thanks, Jeff. Glad to be here.
Glad you are here. I want to start with your upbringing. You grew up about an hour southwest of Raleigh in Carthage, North Carolina.
Big city, the metropolis.
Moore County.
Moore County, one stoplight, blinked every night at 10 o'clock and all day on Sunday.
You're in your mid to late 40s, I surmise.
That's correct.
We can call it mid 40s.
I'm young at heart, but I feel very old.
You got a lot more hair on your head than I do. You have seen a transformation in North Carolina politics. You've been involved from a young age.
Yes.
I guess let's start with that. Who is your guiding light in politics? Who is your political hero?
Oh, so I think everybody of anywhere, if you think about Governor Jim Hunt, anybody who grew up between 30 years old and 60 years old now had Jim Hunt as their governor for part of their life, if not most of their life. I was fortunate to have Governor Hunt from an early age be the governor from politics on, and he and my father had grown up together in Democratic political circles, and that's how I got into the business, honestly. Good old-fashioned nepotism. It's a great thing when you follow your parents into their careers.
You mentioned your dad. He was not an elected official.
He was not.
Fair to call him a mover and a shaker?
He was. He worked for Bill Hefner, a member of Congress, ran his first campaign in 1974 and then ran his office for 24 years.
Men, women, Democrats, North Carolinians of your age have seen a tremendous shift in this state.
Yes.
Do you even recognize the state anymore, or is it just it's a different place?
It's a different place. It's better. You have more access. We're now 10 million people in North Carolina. This will be one of the first elections that we've seen where over 50 to 55% of the people who vote in this election were not born in North Carolina or didn't live here 20 years ago. It's a state that has grown from a small town state to a very urban state. In the last 20 years, we've gone from being sort of 50-50 urban-rural breakdown to now about 75-25. And that's only getting – as North Carolina continues to grow, especially the urban areas, that's you're getting larger urban centers and smaller and smaller rural
you're
areas.
You're looping in suburban areas there. Just
yes, that's
clear.
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Okay.
You think about Wake County, Mecklenburg County, Guilford County. It's not just the cities. It's the suburban areas that are growing. Some of the largest places in North Carolina for growth are not just Raleigh and Charlotte, but places like Cary, Holly Springs, Apex.
Off the top here as we get going, you are a Democratic strategist. You have been in this game for 20-plus years.
20-plus years.
At this point. Just to get it on the table, the disclosures, and you're working with a lot, so you don't have to name everybody. But,
sure.
but top line, what Democratic candidates are you working with right now?
So I've advised Governor Cooper for going on almost 20 years. Worked closely with the governor when he was attorney general. Obviously helped him in his gubernatorial race in 2016. Worked closely with Attorney General Josh Stein. Also worked with Cal Cunningham in the United States Senate, as well as several other campaigns.
And you're working on legislative campaigns or no?
We do some, yes.
Okay.
We do some.
Okay. Name your company's Nexus Strategies.
Nexus Strategies,
which is it sounds super sleek. It's a good name, but it's also very much where you are in the North Carolina political landscape, which is at the nexus of things. And I guess just a little bit of background or context is there are all kinds of rules. I think a lot of our listeners know that, but there are rules about who can communicate with whom as it pertains to advertisements, as it pertains
sure.
to dark money. And I don't mean this in a nefarious way. There aren't necessarily rules for you, and you're very much in a middle position. You're an independent consultant. You can work with outside independent expenditures. You can work with PACs. You can work with candidates. You can you advise the governor both from a policy standpoint and a campaign standpoint. What's it like to be in the middle of it all?
Well, you know, first of all, I'll say the thing about it is you can do all of those entities, but you in different races you have to pick one. For a great point in the governor's race, we advise the governor in the governor's campaign, but we are not involved in any independent effort one way or the other around that campaign because you can't.
Right.
You have to pick a lane, as we say in politics. And you have
as
to
it
be
pertains
on,
to each specific
candidate. Each specific. Yes. And most of the work that we do is candidate specific, meaning sort of you hear on the hard side where we work directly with campaigns. We do some IE work, independent expenditure work. Oftentimes it's issue type driven, where we're working with folks who are trying to move the needle on a policy issue one way or the other.
Do you have internal competing interests at times? I mean, you have a wide swath of candidates who you work for. I got to imagine at times there are overlap in what different folks need or want or are asking for. You only have so many hours in the day. What are some of the areas in which you've got to navigate some of those conflicts?
Sure. Listen, I think the biggest thing is time allocation. I think anybody who's involved in politics will tell you that is how you're able to manage in a very competitive environment these number of races that are taking place. The 2020 North Carolina is ground zero for American politics, and what that means for people like me, other Democratic consultants, for Republican consultants, is we have more demand than we have time this year, and that's a good thing. My wife laughs all the time that even in out years, she says I have five or six jobs, and you just get used to I enjoy that kind of activity, and I think most folks in this business do. It's better to be busy than to not be busy.
We were getting going, just to pull the curtain back a little bit, a few minutes ago, and we were doing a microphone check, and I said, what are you going to have for dinner? And you said, I'm not going to have dinner, which kind of speaks to what you're just addressing there. Where do you waste the most time?
Where do I waste the most time? Probably sleeping. Jeff.
That's a sick comment.
No, it is. You're assuming anybody sleeps in this business, which we don't. No, listen, I think the key is there's a lot of demand. These campaigns are much more expensive, much more. The 24-hour news cycle a few years ago has created – there's no lull in the day. There's no lull in the week. There's always some sort of action, whether it is incoming or outgoing. And I think the key thing is – and you talk about competing interest. Ultimately – we don't have a lot of competing interests because our goal is to lift all the – a rising tide lifts all ships. And we think if the governor does very well electorally and politically, that it helps all Democrats up and down the ballot. So at the end of the day, as the leader of the ticket, that is always going to be the primary concern. But it does have down ticket impact where you want to make sure folks – this open lieutenant governor's race, the other council state, the state legislature, those things. The governor sets the table for how that vote starts after the federal races, and it's important that his campaign is well-resourced and is well-run.
As somebody who grew up in Moore County, you're now a leading Democratic strategist. Have you found that your personal political philosophies have shifted over time, or is this more of the game to you? I mean, is this less personal and more business?
Oh, it's more business, but at the same time, I would tell you, I think it is the thing I enjoy about having grown up in a rural area is it gives you a perspective that a lot of folks who may have only lived in an urban area in their life don't have that perspective. And it really helps inform a lot of the changing dynamics and demographics in North Carolina as North Carolina gets more and more urban. As the urban suburban areas get bluer and bluer, the rural areas get redder and redder, and it sort of helps inform that. And a lot of that comes down to, Jeff, it's really about college-educated voters and non-college-educated voters. It's sort of a misnomer that North Carolina is two states, an urban state and a rural state. There's a high population and high concentration, rather, of college-educated voters in urban and suburban areas, and there's a high concentration of non-college-educated voters in rural areas. And understanding how those electorates view issues and policy and candidates, they view them very differently through very different lenses. And I think one of the challenging things for every candidate and for every consultant out there is how you manage that, how you're able to communicate your issue to a certain demographic that sees the issue completely different than a demographic that may have more or less higher or less education level.
You and I are chatting on a wet Thursday here in Raleigh. This podcast I expect to be released probably on Tuesday, which is the day of the New Hampshire primary, mm-hmm. First primary in the country. What are your expectations for New Hampshire?
So I think we probably need to go back to Iowa to answer that question. And as you said, as on this day, more and more results are coming in. I think we may have the final results maybe after the convention in July or August. We'll know who actually won Iowa. But I think two things
This is a but let me just pause for a second. This is a fiasco. This is a bad thing.
A debacle of highest portions. But listen, here's what I'll tell you. Here's the secret about Iowa. Every Democrat, and I'd say every Republican in the country, but every Democrat in the country for the last 30 years have been trying to kill off the Iowa caucus. It's the most undemocratic, and I don't mean partisan, but I mean way to vote. If you are a single parent, if you're working family where both of the parents are working, if you're an elderly person, you don't have time to go spend 3 hours in a crowded gym debating and pushing and shoving and waiting.
Might not have the money, too.
Sure. And usually, by the way, there's 2 or 3 feet of snow on the ground at the same time when this is going on. And so I would also say that Iowa is the most unrepresentative state in the nation. It is one of the whitest states in the nation. It's one of the smallest states in the nation. At the Democratic Party, and I would say the same thing about the Republican Party, this is an antiquated way to elect presidential nominees, and we got to get rid of it. But what may have happened, Jeff, on last Monday night is that Iowa may have done for itself what the rest of us have been trying to do for 30 years, which is kill it off. And I'm hopeful that at the end of the day, we may have seen our last Iowa caucus.
Let me offer another theory or possibility that could contribute to the demise, the finality of Iowa going first, and that would be Michael Bloomberg.
Yes.
If Mayor Bloomberg does well enough on Super Tuesday, it seems to me that other candidates down the line, 2024, 28, 32, are going to take notice and go, hey, that guy didn't spend any time or money, very much, if any, in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada. Why would we do it? And effectively kill those off. Do you see that as a reasonable possibility?
I think it's possible. Listen, we're in a time of transformation. We're in a time of realignment when traditional norms go away every day. We talk about the 2016 election. Donald Trump won that election and won those primaries and won the general election by being heavily outspent by a number of his opponents, by relying largely on earned media instead of paid media, something that you could not do to be successful. He was largely outspent by Hillary Clinton, again, relying more on earned than on paid media. And so when you think about traditional norms that fall away in society every day, at the end of the day, I think politics is the same thing. Politics has to grow and adapt like everybody else. And I think that means we're going to have to change the Iowa-New Hampshire model. I think Bloomberg is the latest Trump, I said, did the same thing in 16, but differently. If Bloomberg is successful on Super Tuesday, it is a new model. It's a new way to do things.
Two of the very most important things to any campaign, and they might be unequivocally the two most important, are time and money.
That's right.
And a lot of people have drained a lot of resources in Iowa, as happens every 4 years. But Bloomberg didn't. So to stick with this for a moment, would you declare him the winner almost of Iowa?
Absolutely. And I mean, here's what I'll tell you. There are two messages that traditionally, as we talk about, and things do change, but there are two tickets that get punched out of Iowa, two stories that get told from Iowa that carry on, and usually it is the top two finishers. What came out of Iowa on Monday night was there were two stories. One, there was a debacle of epic proportions of the votes not being tallied, the problems with the precincts, the problem with the app, the problem with the phone lines, all that. And it was the fact that there's no winner, which means Michael Bloomberg was the winner. You had hundreds of millions of dollars spent in Iowa, and no one got the bump that they paid for. And they lost all this time in all these places, while Bloomberg has literally had the Super Tuesday states to himself, not only TV-wise in paid media, but in earned media and him traveling around the states. And I think it was a tremendous boon for Michael Bloomberg, the way Iowa worked out. I don't think he could have scripted it to work out better.
Morgan Jackson, your guest here on the WUNC Politics Podcast, on Twitter at Morgan Jackson NC. He's a Democratic strategist who is very much in the heat of 2020, just a few weeks now until the Super Tuesday primary. Tell me why North Carolina should be the first in the nation primary.
I think North Carolina, if it's not the first, it should be one of the first. We have the size of our population here, first of all, as one of the largest states in the nation. We have one of the most diverse electorates in the nation. I think when you look at North Carolina, it is very representative of the nation, how we vote. North Carolina is very much a 50-50 swing state. If Donald Trump doesn't win North Carolina in 2020, he's not going to be president anymore. There's no real path for that. And so when I think about North Carolina, look at North Carolina 2020. You have a battleground presidential, one of the top battleground presidentials. You've got one of the top two or three United States Senate races in the country, the top governor's race in the country, the top AG's race in the country, the only state in the nation with new congressional districts, the only state in the nation with new legislative districts. You should be going to purple states to have these initial contests that are large and diverse and have big electorates.
I would add three open U.S. House seats, three North Carolina Supreme Court races, and the Republican National Convention is here. I have described it to people as the most consequential election since 1980. No hyperbole there, truthfully. I believe that. And maybe the most impactful, the most loaded general election in the history of the state.
Yes.
You mentioned North Carolina being representative of the nation, of the Democratic Party, and the diversity here, the growing population. Mm-hmm. And I can't help but wonder about possible anxiety for you come that first Wednesday in March if you wake up and you see white man, white man, white man at the top of the ticket. We know that there's going to be at least one white man, being Roy Cooper,
right,
running in the gubernatorial race. But if it's and we won't know, I guess, definitively who the presidential nominee
right.
is the Wednesday
we
after Super
That's
Tuesday.
Correct.
History tells us that we will have a really good sense of who he or she will be. Because going back to 1984, almost everybody that emerges from Super Tuesday with the most delegates then gets the nomination. So you're making a face at me. Do you want to jump in there or no?
Yeah, here's what I'll tell you. I think the difference is what's different about this presidential election that we've never seen before is you got to remember part of the reason that presidential elections went – the fields winnow is because people run out of money and they can't compete anymore. Bloomberg clearly has the resources to go to the convention with not a single – not winning a single delegate.
And not maybe even dropping a bead of sweat.
That's right. But I think if you look at the – you know, we just saw some polling numbers that had Biden had dropped to 25, which was mm-hmm. the lowest he's polled in North Carolina. Sanders was – I think it was at 16.
That sounds right. Yep.
And Bloomberg was up to third with 14. So he's
right. – He jumped 6 points or 7 points.
He jumped a lot in the last – I think it was 3 weeks. And so given the rate of advertising, I think Bloomberg's going to get a lot of delegates in a lot of states.
All right, so hypothetical. Let's fast forward and just for conversation's sake say that there are three white men at the top of the ticket. It's Biden or Buttigieg or Sanders, whomever, and Roy Cooper and Cal Cunningham.
Mm-hmm.
North Carolina is representative of both the country and the Democratic Party. What kind of anxiety does that give you to not have a woman or a person of color at the top of the ticket?
It's not ideal, but here's what I'll tell you is we're going to have the largest, most diverse ticket North Carolina has ever had regardless of those first three. You've got you very likely end up with a lieutenant governor's candidate that's either a female or an African-American. As a Democrat, you've got a Chief Justice, the first African American female Chief Justice in North Carolina history, which is as we've seen the last couple of times the Chief Justice has been on the ballot, is a pretty high profile race. Now, it's not a $100 million race, but it is a high profile race. You look at the Democratic candidates that are likely to come through the primary on the council state, there'll be more women and more African Americans than we've ever seen run statewide. When you look at the candidates who filed for the state House and the state Senate, more diversity than we've ever seen who should be among the Democratic nominees. So I think we're pretty convinced that regardless of who the Democratic nominee for president is, if it is a white male, that the vice president's nominee will either be either or both be a female or person of color or potentially even both. And so I think there'll be plenty of strength and diversity from the Democratic ticket from the top to the bottom.
Morgan Jackson, Democratic strategist here on the WNC Politics Podcast, going to move through a few more things, be mindful of your time. You mentioned we've talked about congressional districts that are different in 2020 than they were in 2018, which was different than 2014, which was different than 2008. It goes on and on. But constantly new districts here in the U.S. House conversation. We expect the George Holding seat, the second, which is now Wake County, to go Democratic. We expect the 6th district, which is currently Mark Walker, a Republican, to go blue in November as well. That's a heavy Guilford County and Forsyth County. So those we're just going to set to the side because the expectation is that the 10-3 U.S. House delegation is going to go to an 8-5 Republican advantage. A potentially interesting congressional race that I'd like to hear from you on is the 8th, and
mm-hmm.
that's presently the district of Richard Hudson, a 4-term Republican. The current district stretches from Salisbury to Fayetteville. However, that point is moot, as I just mentioned, because we've had congressional redistricting. It took place last fall. The district, while still mostly rural, does now include all of Cumberland County. That's where Fayetteville is. It's where a sizable black population is registered to vote. Hudson's opponent, Patricia Timmons Goodson, is a former member of the state Supreme Court. She's also an African-American. How close do you expect the state's 8th district to be?
Listen, I think when you think about congressional races and federal races in general, it's all about starting out with a foundation that you can build upon. I think Patricia Tillmans Goodson is an excellent candidate. She's of Fayetteville. She's been in that community for her whole life. She was elected as a local judge many times. She's obviously was elected a number of times statewide. Has a very strong relationships. I think the entire county of Cumberland now being in that district is a big boon for her, and I think she's a really strong recruit for Democrats. At the same time, it's a tough district. It is a Republican-leaning district that, left to its own devices, will elect a Republican. That's one of those races that where we look at it from sort of strategy point of view is get a good candidate who can get in there and run a good race, raise the kind of resources you need, have the local community support, and then at the end of the day, you try to build upon what the national environment is. If the president's race in North Carolina is won by a Democrat, then Pat Timmons Goodson has a really good chance of going to Congress. If Trump was to get reelected, if he wins the state and he wins it larger than he last time, that gets really hard in that district. But again, I think we won't know any of those dynamics until we have a nominee, whoever he or she may be. And I think there's a lot out there. But right now we're really excited about Timmons Goodson. And again, she brings a lot of the foundational things you need to run a strong campaign. And we feel it's a big recruit for Democrats.
We're going to go rapid fire before we get you out of here. Over, under, percent of registered voters in North Carolina that head to the polls, general election 2020, over, under 70%.
Easily over.
I want to stick with contemporary candidates. Who is one Republican that you would not want to run against statewide?
Who is a Republican I would not want to run against statewide? Probably Steve Troxler.
Why are you a Chicago Bears fan?
So growing up in North Carolina, everybody was – this is pre-Carolina Panthers – is everybody was either a Redskins or a Cowboys fan. And I just decided I wanted to be different. And so my brother and I used to go to the grocery store with our mother, and we would look at the gumball machines, and they had the NFL helmets in there. And believe it or not, I decided – this was in the late 70s. I decided that I liked the Bears logo. And so I became a Chicago Bears fan just to do something a little bit different.
You wanted to be different, but that didn't lead you to become a libertarian.
No, that did not. I didn't want to be that different.
Your wife says podcasting is the best medium for you. Why?
Yeah, she said I have a face for podcasts. It's great.
Last one, I think. When and where did you first meet Roy Cooper?
I met Roy Cooper. Good Lord, he was in the state Senate. It was probably 1996. I can't remember if he was majority leader of the state Senate. No, I think he was just he chaired a couple of committees, but I met him back then.
Morgan Jackson's a country boy from Carthage. That's in Moore County. He co-founded Nexus Strategies a couple of decades ago now and is one of the leading Democratic strategists here in North Carolina politics. And he just joined us, and you heard from him here on the WNC Politics Podcast. Morgan, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, glad to do it, Jeff.
As always, you can subscribe to the program iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. Stay up to date with whatever happened or some of what happened in North Carolina politics throughout the week at our website, WUNC.org. We recorded this conversation at our studio inside the Museum of Natural Sciences in downtown Raleigh. Thanks for listening. For Morgan, I'm Jeff. We'll talk to you again soon.
You will make it there someday, and you'll sing Caroline. Now I'm home. On my own, 'cause they robbed me blind and left me. Oh, well, I've been wrong, but someday you'll sing Caroline. I'm coming home till I can get there. My